Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Well, guys, it's been an amazing week as the collapse of human industrial civilization is entering a very new and stark era, phase, stage of its course that's going to wreak havoc with pretty much all of our lives. But it's also going to open a lot of doors, windows, and cracks and crevices for those of us who are building lifeboats to crawl through and eke through. We've got a good show tonight. I just want to spend a second here before we get into our great guest tonight, Dmitry Orlov, talking about some of this week's developments. There's been a whole new change in the tone and texture of collapse this week as we have seen the emergence of currency wars around the world, as battles are erupting between nations to devalue their currency so that somebody will be able to buy their goods cheaper than somebody else's goods. One of the nations at the forefront of this, of course, is the United States of America, which is really desperately trying to devalue the dollar, which is going to have some serious effects for all of us as oil prices and food prices rise. But through Congress now, measures are passing to declare China a currency manipulator, and already a trade war is erupting as tariffs are being proposed, and China's levied tariffs on American chickens. And this is going to get real nasty, but it's happening as about 8 or 10 nations now are scrambling to devalue their currencies. And so that's adding to a great deal of instability, even as QE2, another round of bailouts, is now pretty much a given. I mean, the New York Times today has just said, there is another bailout package, TARP 2, coming on the way. And now what's happening around the world, as we see in massive demonstrations throughout Europe this week, I mean, I clipped a story just now. It said that in Reykjavik, Iceland, the Icelandic citizens are chasing their members of parliament down the street, and they're running for their lives. But we've seen massive demonstrations all week throughout Europe, and those are only going to get worse. So these are very interesting times, and we're moving into a new, deeper, and much more serious phase, because everybody's kind of getting now that there was a price, and there always has been a price to be paid for turning on these printing presses of bailouts, and that those prices have really are just cutbacks in services, laying off police officers. I just clipped a thing where Atlantic City has just laid off 40 police officers, including a pregnant mother, streetlights going out, services being cut back, pension funds failing, et cetera, et cetera. So this is going to be a whole new evolution in collapse, and that's been what's happening with us all week now. And of course, I'm monitoring all that and commenting on it now on a regular basis, sometimes twice a day, on our world news desk at collapsenet.com. That's my website, where we have a lot of features that are helping people to build lifeboats right now. Some are absolutely free, like we have a great directory if you go to collapsenet.com. That's now probably over 500 entries, and that's growing rapidly, of goods, services, instructions, people that can show you how to relocalize, not only by way of growing your own food locally, but doing a great many things that we're all going to need to be doing for ourselves very soon. That's one great feature at CollapseNet. The other is an interactive map where you can find other members who are close to you and share skill sets so that you can build community close to where you live without having to wade through the ever-thinning ranks of zombies out there who believe that everything is fine and infinite growth is possible. Plus, you have the best digest of news stories from around the world, thanks to Jenna Orkin on our CollapseNet site for our members, where I comment on a daily basis, and those comments are proving very useful now as things are happening very rapidly. If you want to be a member of CollapseNet, it's $100 a year, about 27 cents a day. But again, there's a lot of free features there. I encourage you to check it out. So this is the world that we're living in, and it's all pretty much as we predicted. This week, the movie Collapse, the documentary Collapse that I'm in has opened in England, and it's getting a lot of attention. It's had some great reviews. The Guardian gave us a great review. They even talked about us on BBC a couple nights ago. Of course, they said, some of the panelists said I was a crazy conspiracy theorist, but there were a lot of people there who, on the panel, who seemed to be kind of going, well, this is making sense given what we see. So we pray that that this awakening that's taking place gains in speed and strength and numbers, because there is a shift in consciousness taking place. Tonight's going to be a very, very fun show. Our guest tonight, let me tell you first about my guest next week. Our guest next week will be Janiyah Donaldson of Peak Moment Television. She's been traveling all over the country and filming lifeboat building activities and produced just some amazing videos. And she's going to be our guest next week to talk to us about what I'm discovering also, and many of us are, that lifeboat building is actually fun and very productive. For tonight, if you want to call in to the show, the number is 888-874-4888. You can call in with your questions there. And we have a new feature tonight. We have a new email address that will come directly to me. So if you're online and you want to ask questions of me or Dmitry Orlov, you can email directly, and that'll come to me, and I'll read them. And you want to write this down, lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. Now, my guest tonight, Dmitry Orlov, is a very smart and a very funny guy who I made friends with some years ago at From the Wilderness, when I had my newsletter. I believe I was the first to publish him in the States. He was someone who was brought to me by a great friend, Dale Allen Pfeiffer, who was our energy editor there at FTW, who said, you need to read this guy Orlov. He survived the collapse of the Soviet Union. And he witnessed what collapse is all about and how it plays, and he's made some amazing observations, and that became a book. His book is called Reinventing Collapse, The Soviet Example and American Prospects. Dmitry is the author of that award-winning book. He's written another one. He'll tell us about that, The Soviet Example and American Prospects. The second edition of his book is due to be published in the spring of 2011. Born in Russia, he moved to the U.S. while a teenager, and he's traveled back repeatedly to observe the Soviet collapse during the late 80s and mid-90s. He's an engineer who has worked in many fields, including high-energy physics research, e-commerce, and internet security. Recently, Dmitry has been experimenting with off-grid living and renewable energy by giving up his house and car. Instead, he's been living on a sailboat, sailing it up and down the eastern seaboard and commuting by bicycle. Dmitry believes that given appropriate technology, we'll get to that, I guess, we can greatly reduce personal resource consumption while remaining perfectly civilized. And for those who know Dmitry, we all know that he has an amazing sense of humor. Dmitry, are you with us tonight?
Yes, I'm here, Mike.
How are you doing?
Excellent. Good to be with you.
Great. Now, I brought you on because I know your sense of humor, and I had to do this because I can see your face as I do this. I'm going to play a song by my band, New White Trash. And both songs I want to mention tonight, I'm kind of dedicating to the memory of my dear friend Matthew Simmons, whose services are going to be held, public services, tomorrow in Houston, Texas. I was going to go, but alas, I couldn't afford the plane ticket. But we in the Peak Oil Movement, Sustainability Movement, have known Matt to be just a very courageous, clear-spoken, wonderful man of integrity, who till his last day was telling truths that people didn't want to hear. Dmitry, did you ever meet Matt?
No, we never met, actually, but I've paid attention to everything that he's put out for years and years.
Yeah, he's a great loss, and his passing leaves a great hole in all of our lives. Anyway, this first song, Dmitry, I thought you would get a kick out of this. New White Trash is our band with music of the post-paradigm, and we write about what's going on. It's a song that's sung by a great singer. Her name is Kristen Weygaard, and I was there when she recorded this in three takes all off the top of her head. And this is a song that I'm going to dedicate to BP and Deepwater Horizon. It's called Don't Dig Too Deep.
Don't
Actual lyrics are to that song, but I'm sure Dmitry will understand this, having lived in Soviet Union. Our answer, if you want the exact words to that song, is "Don't Dig Too Deep." The song you just heard is from Double Wide, Music of the Post Paradigm. It's a brand new double CD, 37 song release from the Venice, California band, The New White Trash, available at newwhitetrash.com. It's no secret I love this band, the music, and all of the members, because I am one. Double Wide premiered 3 weeks ago here on the Lifeboat Hour, and the response has been very supportive and very positive. And as a way to say thanks, the band is giving away 100 free downloads of We Can't Escape From, a song featured on the DVD edition of the documentary film Collapse. Simply go to the website, newwhitetrash.com, click on the song, and then click download. In addition to the free download of We Can't Escape From, you can stream all the songs, and if you like what you hear, throw down and support us by downloading Double Wide for $12.12 plus tax and shipping. You can purchase, your purchase includes a complimentary digital copy of New White Trash, Music of the Post Paradigm, and our 20-page photo companion booklet. We're also offering a sponsor's edition limited to 999 copies. Each includes two full-color discs packaged in a home-crafted rough paper printed sleeve, plus a 20-page photo companion booklet's really cool, delivered in both physical and digital form. Purchase includes immediate electronic download of all songs and an answer to any of the email inquiries that we've had. So we've had a lot of queries about this, about T-shirts, and yes, we're working on it. Men's, women's, small, medium, large, extra large, they're all in the way. We'll keep you posted on that. You can find us at New White Trash. Dmitry, don't dig too deep. I was thinking about this before the show, and I've been reading a lot about commodities. Everybody's worried about commodities. Oil is a commodity. Gold is a commodity. Recently, rare earths and precious other rare metals are precious, sought-after commodities, as China appears to be holding those and limiting the world's ability to manufacture high-tech goods. It occurred to me that perhaps the most important commodity in the world right now is trust. What do you think about that?
Yes, that's absolutely true. I think the whole shift from investments, equities, to safer, you know, safe havens, the treasuries, for instance, then to gold, and then to various types of commodities, grain, for instance. That is all going in one direction, but at the end of that, all you're left with is relationships with, you have with people,
mm-hmm.
and relationships you have with ecosystems. And so this is basically part of the unraveling process, where things that don't actually mean anything are flushed out of the system. People think that gold means something, and, you know, historically for thousands of years it has. But in a very disrupted environment, what are you going to do with gold? Find somebody who will kill you for it? And people don't actually think it through, that, you know, having all that precious metal sitting around is something that makes them a bit of a sitting duck. You know, they'd be better off just surrounding themselves with friends, you know, investing in their friends, as opposed to investing in a bit of metal. And same for just about every commodity. If you're hoarding a lot of something that somebody's going to find useful, they will take it away from you. But the one thing that nobody can really take away from you is the trust and the relationships that you have with other people, with the people around you, and the knowledge, the intimate knowledge you have of the ecosystem that gives you ways to survive off the land. So those are really the things that people should be thinking about.
In your first book, there was a term, I think, that you used called blot, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, because I used that with a Russian woman, and she was almost ready to slap me. But
You don't want to say blet. You want to say blot.
Ah.
Because blet is, you probably inadvertently called her name.
Uh-oh.
I should have coached you a little bit.
Thank you. What is blot?
Blot basically means some kind of a private deal that circumvents the system. So, for instance, something is not for sale, but for you it is. Or a certain establishment is closed. You know, it's not open for business, but for your friends it is. All of those sorts of things. Access that is not publicly advertised and sanctioned by the authorities. Various kinds.
Well, that kind of goes along with my stated advice to everybody, which is that one of the ways that we are going to survive the collapse of industrial civilization and of the United States government and everything else that's coming is to operate as much as possible outside the system so that you're not sucked down with it. But that seems to be a much tougher challenge for Americans, perhaps, than Russians. Is that right?
Oh, it absolutely is. I think that, you know, there are certain parts of the mindset where the language trips you up. So English is a language that grammatically marks possession of things. So there are languages, for instance, that grammatically mark the present, the past, and the future, and others don't. There are languages that tell you whether an action is taking place uphill or downhill. That mm-hmm. is a necessary part of the verb conjugation. Mm-hmm. So you can't get away from it. So you have to say something, I caught a fish uphill, because it's not downhill.
Right.
You see, and in English, you brush your teeth with your toothbrush. It's not like you're going to brush anybody else's teeth.
Right.
But you say it anyway. So the language is just saturated with the logic of possession, of private ownership.
And as I said on the very first program, the premiere episode of the show, that we are trapped by paradigmatic thinking that actually constricts our ability to see and respond to reality, simply because of verbal constructs we build that kind of block our ability to deal with things.
Yes, people are limited in what they can think by the things that they can say or hear. So if all they speak is American English, they're going to operate in this American English realm and not be able to break out of it. And it's a bit of a tragedy, unfortunately.
Now, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, we can both go ahead. After you, no, after you. In your book, you talk about the five stages of collapse, starting with financial, then commercial, then political, then social, and then cultural. Could you talk about those briefly?
Well, yes. The financial collapse is definitely the first, because that is basically based on hope and faith and assumptions. And once those assumptions become untenable, people still hope against hope for a while that, for instance, economic growth will resume, all these debts will be off, everything will start operating normally. And the financial system is a system that works while everything is going well and breaks down catastrophically when things are going badly for an extended period of time. So problems accumulate within the system, and then it's sort of like a pressure release, and everything breaks all at once. I saw that during the default in Russia in the 1990s, when the Russian government basically tried to kite these documents called GKO, government convertible obligations, and they basically kept rolling them over. These were short maturity government commercial, paper, treasury paper. And every time they rolled it over, they would have to almost double the interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
And when the interest rate reached something like 100%, that's when something occurred, which I call the ha-ha moment, when everybody goes, ha-ha, that's funny, we're not buying it, goodbye.
Goodbye.
And so at some point that will occur here, where, you know, there's an auction for treasury paper and nobody comes.
And that's when the Fed will have to step in, and that will be one of the triggers for hyperinflation. So in your sequence, you talk about next being commercial collapse. What's that?
Well, that's basically when people are cut off from the product that they've come to depend on. And that can take any number of forms. It happens on the periphery first. It doesn't affect the centers of industrial and economic activity at first. So there are a lot of places which used to have little groceries and hardware stores and lots of little establishments that all were driven out of business when Walmart or a big box store moved into town. A strip mall built on the outskirts basically ate the downtown. So what happens when the big box store goes out of business is the entire community is completely cut off from the various products that they've come to depend on.
Mm-hmm.
They have to drive long distances to get it. So that is the sort of commercial collapse that we're seeing now. But another commercial collapse is going to occur when the entire country is cut off from various types of imports that it depends on.
Like food?
Food, a lot of food is locally produced, but it has to be transported great distances. So there's it's multiplied by the cost of energy, which is imported, transportation fuels especially. So that is going to be a problem as well. But I think that commercial collapse hasn't really occurred because most of the problems that are occurring now are financial, and that is beginning to affect the political life of the country.
Yeah, that's the next stage. Now, we're not going to be able to make all of the stages before the half-hour break, but talk briefly about political collapse, and then we have a caller who I'm going to come to right after that, but tell us about political collapse and what that is.
Well, what we're seeing right now is that the financial system cannot be reformed without changing the laws in very big, major ways, not the little bit, you know, nibbling around the edges that have been done so far.
Mm-hmm.
But that can't happen without the political system actually being made to work. And that is
Sorry,
not going
I'm
to happen.
Yes.
So the financial system is a problem that theoretically could be solved if the political problem could be solved, but the political problem cannot be solved. So basically it's just a cascaded failure that starts with financial collapse, then proceeds to political collapse.
I'm going to ask our caller, Kim, to hold on until after the station break because we're on kind of a roll with these points. We got about 3 minutes left. So political collapse is kind of like what we're seeing now in Iceland. We're seeing these massive protests in Spain, 100,000 people in the street, general strikes, railways shut down, and governments failing. Would that include also a point in time when peoples in any country around the world severely affected rebel against the government? Is that Greece?
That will happen in a lot of places, but you know there's a difference between a place like Iceland, which is like a very large extended family, really, not really so much a country as a big family, or Spain, which is an historical nation, or the United States, which is pretty much just an acronym, just like the USSR, the USA.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an acronym nation. You know, it doesn't really have a name. And America is the name of a continent, not a country.
We have a great many regions here that are very different from each other.
Yes, and they're just basically held together by a thing called Washington. So when the thing called Washington stops to function, which it can for any number of reasons, then there isn't any longer anything called, you know, the United States. The entity pretty much evaporates. And before it does, it probably just won't be able to do very much. It'll be non-functional for a while.
I think there's quite a few people, especially in the Gulf of Mexico, who are kind of perceiving that right now. So now we get to things like social collapse and cultural collapse. They sound kind of vague, but I think they might be even more dangerous. What's social collapse?
Well, that is something that has pretty much run its course in the United States, because it's a country where people have moved around a lot and hardly ever know their neighbors. They can't really rely on their neighbors for very much. Everything they can do requires money. Everything has been commercialized. All sorts of transactions, like, you know, having your children taken care of is called babysitting or daycare and requires money. Just about everything that Americans do requires participation in the financial system specifically. So when that goes away, people are just completely cut off from each other. And in other places in the world, people basically live in families and clans where everybody knows each other, mm-hmm. where no matter what happens, they're going to take care of each other. That's why they feel comfortable taking part in street demonstrations, because they know that they have a community to fall back on no matter what happens.
That kind of makes it very important for us here in the States, or anybody else who's listening, to really kind of invest to generate some social capital where you live. We're going to need to break here in a second for a brief two-minute segment at the bottom of the hour. We're going to hear just a taste of a new White Trash song when we come back. We will be back and take our caller, Kim, from New York. And if you want to email a question for Dimitri, again, the email address is lifeboathour@collapsenet.com, or you can call at 888-874-4888. We'll be back in a minute.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
This is an emergency. No, it isn't. It's an urgency. I'm Danny Schechter, your news dissector on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com with a new show called News Dissector. It's built on the blog that I do every day from MediaChannel.org, dissecting news, analyzing what's happening in the world, offering very cool music and great guests. Thursdays, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Be there or be square.
The shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Are you a conscious college student? If you're interested in progressive news and politics, we want to hear from you. The Progressive Radio Network is looking for radio hosts to discuss college life and the issues dealing with being in a university. Send an email to karalee@garynoel.com, karalee@garynoel.com, or call 646-307-4482 and tell me your radio experience and any idea you could contribute to PRN.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you.
This is Michael C. Rupert with our guest tonight, Dmitry Orlov, who is a great author, a good friend, and a very prescient observer of the times that are going on. The song you just heard a little taste of was called Lululemons. It's from New White Trash. You can find all 37 of our songs at newwhitetrash.com. I think I want to go now. We've had a caller waiting on the line for a while. Kim from New York. Kim, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, Michael, I want to ask you, what is your opinion about Matt Simmons' theory about an extant additional unreported leak in the C4 and the Deepwater incident and cover-up thereof, which he stated on several occasions in the weeks just before he died?
Mm-hmm.
If you think there's any chance it's true, when do you think we'll know? And if not, why do you think he thought this?
No, I absolutely believe that it's true. And at Collapse.net, on our World News Desk, we had been steadily posting stories that confirmed, and even that there have been some official confirmations, that there's this very large pool of oil down there. And there was a massive leak down there. We don't know if that second massive hole has been plugged yet. I quite frankly, I don't believe it has. But on the World News Desk, almost every day we have stories coming out of research facilities, local papers, colleges, universities, verifying that the levels of toxicity in the Gulf are horrible. We published one recently that said the AMA was briefing doctors in the area to prepare to be ready for treating oil-related illnesses. We're seeing the people down there not willing to eat the fish. We're seeing increased incidence of illness down there. And in my opinion, what's happened is that a cover-up of massive proportions has taken place, and essentially what's happening is that the people in the Gulf are being slowly murdered. Matt was one of the most decent and clear-headed and thorough men I have ever met in my whole life. And for the many years that I knew him and met him in countries around the world and interviewed him, I never knew him once to exaggerate or to say anything that he didn't have thoroughly backed up. So that's the way I feel about that. Do you have a question for Dmitry?
No, actually, that was my main question wanting to ask you. But thank you very much. I'll check Collapse.net for more info.
Okay, we've got a couple more callers on the line. But Dmitry, we had just kind of gotten to the cusp of talking about the last of your stages, cultural collapse, which I have read your analysis of. And that's the scariest part, which kind of reminds me of the movie The Road, which I hope everybody has seen. Dmitry, what is cultural collapse?
Well, cultural collapse is really where people stop looking like people, right? Where families stop looking like families, and where children are not really brought up to know what their parents knew, where the chain of tradition is broken. That has run its course in the United States as well, because this is a young culture that has shed a lot of tradition that people brought with them from other places, whereas the local Native American traditions have been neglected and have not been absorbed into mainstream culture as they have in other American countries. And so this is a place where the culture has become rather thin and is not really supportive of the sort of stable clan-based society that holds a lot of other countries together through thick and thin.
Well,
so social and cultural collapse are really things that have occurred here already. In that sense, this is already a post-apocalyptic country. This is where many different nations have come to die, in a sense.
Isn't it true that you would say clans have held the world together? I would say tribes. It's probably the same thing. But isn't that what held the human race together for all of its history until the Industrial Age?
Well, yes. We're really very well evolved to deal with maybe a dozen individuals every day on a daily basis. If a group becomes larger than that, then a lot of time becomes wasted on something called social grooming if you're a biologist, and politics if you're not. And politics is just a very wasteful activity that absorbs a lot of energy. So in an energy-scarce environment, you can't afford it. You have to have a very small crew or you don't make it. And so we evolved biologically to deal with a small group like that on a regular daily basis. We can deal with other groups of that size, gather in large groups once in a while for a festival or something like that, or a fair. But basically, we're very efficient at forming very small societies and very inefficient at forming very large ones.
Mm-hmm. I've got a caller on the line, BJ in San Diego, and my little note here says that he's asking about the BP oil spill and comparing that to Chernobyl. Let's get him on the line and see what the question is. BJ, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yes, Dmitry may have a very good insight into Gorbachev and the Chernobyl situation being like a bellwether for the collapse of the Soviet Union. What about the BP oil spill? It would seem to may also be a bellwether to what we're going through.
Well, it did undermine, out of the Chernobyl disaster, that is, did undermine a lot of residual faith that people had that the party would take care of them on some level. They really ended up looking absolutely feckless and corrupt, and they made a big public show of lying repeatedly. And so a lot of people thought that, well, if we perpetuate the system, we're all going to die. So we better just stand back and let it collapse. And a lot of people, that's the point at which a lot of people basically just stopped cooperating on every level.
I'll speak for myself on that. You know, when you said if we perpetuate the system, we're all going to die, I said, well, that's kind of the way I'm feeling now here. I don't know if anybody else feels that way or not.
Yes, actually, I agree with you. I was thinking about the way the American life is going, to quote Dick Cheney, the American way of life is non-negotiable. But it would look like the capitalists in Wall Street are doing a darn good job. They're doing a lot better job than any communist or socialist ever did.
Well, the idea of not negotiating with nature is really, you know, funny, not in a, you know, in a ha-ha sense. Because if you refuse to negotiate with nature, you're assigned a new negotiator named Death pretty quickly.
See, that's what I love about Dmitry. That's what I love about Russians. No, I can't say the whole word on the radio, but, you know, that's the clarity that brings to this. Nature does not negotiate. We're in the middle of a mass extinction right now, and so we got a lot to deal with. Hey, the calls are stacking up. BJ, thank you very much. I want to go now to Steve in Tennessee. All my note says is heard ISH occurring. Is that true? I have no idea what ISH is. Maybe Steve will tell us. Hi, Steve.
Hey, this question is for Dmitry and also for you, Mike. I don't know if you've heard anything about a new ice age. I ripped this thing last week off the internet. It says life on Earth has just changed. The North Atlantic Current is gone. A new ice age is upon us. It came off of infiniteunknown.net, and this Dr. Gianluigi Zangari, who was a PhD from the Frascati Institute of Theoretical Physics. He says the Gulf of Mexico loop current, you know, which feeds the Gulf Stream, has virtually stopped as of May. And
let me jump in on that.
I've
seen a lot of those stories, and none of them pass my journalist sniff test. I mean, you know, I was a professional journalist. Dana Perino returned my calls from the White House press office, you know, and so did every other agency. And I wouldn't put a lot of stock in that right now, because things like that are usually extremely well sourced, and we would have a number of other confirmations of that appearing all over the place that would be impossible to hide. Dmitry, you got any feel on that?
People seem to think that if it's a cold spell, then it's an ice age, and if it's a hot spell, then it's global warming, and that's just completely silly. But what isn't silly is that the climate has been incredibly disrupted.
Yes.
And we see that everywhere. One year Australia is on fire, next year Pakistan is underwater, and the Moscow region is on fire.
Yeah.
You know, and we're looking at a pattern where the thing that will affect us most from all this freak weather is failed harvest.
So you might drive
for miles and miles, for days and days, and just look at dead corn everywhere.
Well, that is Los Angeles suffering from 113-degree Fahrenheit weather.
Yeah, but that was the warmest day we've had all year. We virtually hit, otherwise we've had the coldest summer on record here. But I think the point is clear, is that climate change is happening, and I think we can all agree that it's happening much more aggressively. And that it's happening unpredictably. I'm not going to lose sleep over the Gulf Stream current yet, because I haven't seen enough evidence, and we have a whole list of things to worry about that are probably taking precedence, and they're very clearly articulated or present in front of our eyeballs. Thank you, Steve. We got calls lining up. I like this. This
okay.
is very good. We got Randy in upstate New York, and he's asking a good question, I think, about agriculture in Russia. Randy, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Dmitry, I've read all your accounts of what happened in Russia, and I think back to the 30s here. My folks both went through the Depression really, really hard. And I remember a fellow saying one time that we had an option in 1930 we don't have today. We could go backwards in technology, that every farm still had a team of horses, and most importantly, every farm still had somebody who knew how to use that team. And how did you guys get through your collapse in the 90s in Russia?
Well, there was a kitchen garden economy on the one hand, and on the other hand, a certain amount of industrial agriculture kept happening. There were some disruptions, and the biggest disruptions were really fuel supply disruptions during harvest time, when you know there was no fuel to run the combines to get all the grain in.
Right.
Process. That was really just a catastrophe that happened one summer. I don't remember what year that was, but it was all over the news, and people were very broken up about doing all this work and not being able to get the harvest in.
Yeah.
That was a big deal.
I think the numbers that scare me the worst is that in 1930 there was only 100 million people in this country, and like 46% of that population was involved directly in agriculture.
Now
we got 300 plus million people, and less than 1% is involved in agriculture.
Yes, and I think that the agriculture industry as it stands now in the United States is not going to be very helpful moving forward.
No.
So I think that what people have to do is start growing and gathering food wherever they are, digging up the backyard and the front yard.
I just hope there's enough of us to go backwards in technology to get this through this.
Well, the thing is, the idea that you need technology in order to grow food is rather strange.
Yes.
I mean, we managed to feed ourselves for thousands of years without much technology at all.
Yeah.
And there's... A lot of people have done work recently to figure out how to grow grain without tilling the soil, for instance. A lot of people have done recently ways of putting together guilds of plants as opposed to growing a monoculture.
Permaculture.
So that you don't need pesticides or don't need as much of them. How to make use of animals of various kinds and insects, beneficial insects, so that you don't rely on chemicals. And all of this is new stuff, new developments that didn't exist back then, so that people are, if they want to, intellectually much better equipped now to grow their own food.
I would add,
better than anyone has ever been in the history of humanity.
Yeah, and I would add that what we need now is not so much to learn but to remember. Man's relationship with the earth is something that was ingrained in our species for hundreds of thousands of years. And that's a skill set which may be intuitive, it may be buried, but it needs to be remembered somehow. And, of course, we do have problems to overcome, like soil restoration and things like that. And what I'm so pleased about to learn, and our guest next week, Janiah Donaldson, will help us see how widespread that's becoming, is how quickly people are moving to going back to growing their own food and a lot of innovations that they're coming up with over that. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
That was a great question. Thank you. Just before we take a break for our next song, Dmitry, what do you see coming up next on our short-term horizons here?
I don't know. I try to keep out of the short-term prediction business. It's just the long-term trends are so much more interesting and tell so much more.
What have you learned living on a sailboat and traveling up and down the eastern seaboard and living without a car?
Well, basically there's something I call the Iron Triangle in the United States, which is You need a place to live, so that's a house, and you can't get to the house without a car. And then to pay for the two of them, you need a job. So you have the house, car, job, iron triangle, and you can't get rid of any one of them. So I decided to escape the whole system by moving on to a boat. And it turned out to be a really good decision because living on a boat is really cheap for a number of reasons. You know, it's pretty small, so you can't really afford things like furniture. You can't buy a widescreen TV because it won't fit on board. And you basically are forced to downsize your entire existence so that it fits the small footprint of a sailboat.
How big is your boat?
It's a 32-footer.
Okay.
So it's a reasonable-sized boat. I probably would never get a bigger one.
And would you say you're comfortable?
Yes, yeah. Once it's set up, it's really like a cradle, a cocoon. It's perfect. It's got the right combination of ingredients there. But then, on top of that, it's got an independent power supply. It's got an independent water supply from filtered rainwater. It's got an independent source of propulsion from the sails. I can do all the maintenance on it. There is absolutely no regulation, really, of the sort that owners have to deal with, from zoning, from codes, all of that sort of stuff. It just doesn't exist. So, for instance, I don't have to get a permit to install a wind generator on a mast. I just go ahead and do it.
That's one of the things that I'm discovering as my life moves more into an earth-centered mode. I'm under an aggressive program now where my diet's changing and my lifestyle is changing. And instead of finding it to be difficult, I'm finding it to be liberating. And that's one of the ideas I want to plant in people's heads as we continue on the Lifeboat Hour and as the show continues, is that there are aspects of this that are liberating, especially in the way we view the world around us and relate to us. We're going to take a break for our second New White Trash song, and I want to set this one up. This is a song that I co-wrote with the band, and you'll hear me singing on it. And this goes back to Matt Simmons again, my good friend, because Matt Simmons, as we traveled around the world, and especially the last time that I saw him at the ASPO, Association for the Study of Peak Oil USA conference in Sacramento in 2008, Matt had five daughters, and Matt was one of the guys like me who was really concerned about what kind of a world we were leaving to future generations behind us. And we were both concerned. We both wanted to have a better legacy. We wanted to leave behind something that was livable and also some values that were usable. And as I was writing this song, and especially even as I sang it, I was thinking about Matt Simmons. So here is a song called Weird Kind of Sense from New White Trash.
What a mess we left you. What a mess we left you. Against the odds and other gods, we left you such a mess.
Toasting on tea and champagne. Nothing left but a dried stain. Camped by the fire in formal time. Under the change of the changing. This is not tomorrow. Today is not a drill. Thank you.
a drill, makes a big grandstand. Yesterday needs no warning, and the prophecy is fulfilled. What a mess we left here. A rotting, rotting mess we left to see the screen become a rotting, rotting mess we left to more and more intent. A rotting, rotting mess we left to tearing down the only rotting, rotting mess that God in heaven sent. A rotting, rotting mess we left to see the sweet consent. A rotting, rotting mess we left to see the sweet consent.
Kind of Sense from New White Trash. You can find our songs at newwhitetrash.com. Our guest tonight is Dmitri Orlov, a good friend and just a very cool guy who has survived the collapse of the Soviet Union, written a book about it. And Dmitri, you have a blog, don't you? That's Club Orlov?
Yes, it's cluborlov.blogspot.com.
And how often do you post there?
It's fairly irregular. I don't really, try to make a virtue out of consistency.
Mm, same here. I understand that. It's kind of an unnecessary pressure. What are you doing right now? What are your plans to do with regard to the work that you've contributed to for all these years in helping to make people aware? Are you going to write another book? You got what have you got coming?
I'm putting out the second edition of Reinventing Collapse, which I've expanded and added some chapters. There's a big new chapter on energy, since peak oil now seems to be over, some other new material as well, and the old material is edited and updated. I didn't really make any new predictions, but I've commented on the predictions that have come true since I first published the book. And so that's coming out in the springtime, and I might also put out something else, something I might self-publish as a companion book.
Okay. I've had this experience many, many times, and no doubt so have you. We give a talk, a public lecture, I've given them in like 8 or 9 countries, and I know you've traveled and spoken a lot. What do you do with the people, someone who comes running up to you and says, tell us what to do?
Well, I tell people that that's a little bit too much responsibility.
Yes.
And that they have to think for themselves.
Mm, that's beautiful. And it's short and sweet, and it actually does summarize everything. There's things you can read to find out what's going on, but you need to become aware. You need to situate yourself in the environment in which you live. And relocalization, of course, is the primary first step in that, because as these events get worse in our lives, we are going to be forced to deal and look for our answers much, much closer to the ground that's under our feet. As we go on from here, is there anything that you've seen that's encouraging or positive or reason to have increased hope? Any developments that you've spotted?
Well, I'm not a big believer in hope. I think that, hope is something that just makes people believe others who just make promises.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most the activity that feeds hope is, like the Obama campaign was all about hope. So I think that people have to have a realistic idea of what's happening, and hope is not very helpful. In terms of having a realistic idea of what's happening, I think that what we're talking about here is starting to encroach a little bit on at least some of the media that we have in the United States. You know, by no means the mainstream. You know, the mainstream pretty much is and will ever remain a sewer in this country.
Yeah.
But there are some people who are tuning in, more and more of them. And of course, now they all go through the same set of reactions, the typical reactions that everybody goes through when they're first confronted with this.
Okay, we're gonna have to wrap up. We're kind of running out of time. I want to thank my guest, Dmitry Orlov. I apologize for cutting you off. We are just running out of time. Dmitry is a great guy, and sometimes we all need doses of reality. Next week on the show again, Janiyah Donaldson, Peak Moment TV, who is going to share a lot of stories about things that people are doing that are making a difference in their lives and preparing them. Again, you don't have to be faster than the bear if a bear attacks your camp. You just have to be faster than the slowest camper. So I want to thank you all. Dmitry, again, thank you so very much. I want to stay in touch, and we will see you again next week on the Lifeboat Hour, and we're going to take you out with another song, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye.
It all happened so fast.